In this episode of Timey-Wimey TV, Liz and Rudy catch up on the hot Doctor Who gossip from Comic-Con and delve into the terrible time travel movies available on Netflix. Hey, Internet! Hi, how's it going? How are you? You're looking good. You're looking thin. You've lost a little weight. I think you've lost a little weight, Internet. Good for you.
Liz, are you flirting with the Internet again?
Yeah, I am. I'm Liz Shedemiller, at Lizlet on the Twitters.
You can call her also at, no.
For a good time.
For a good time. Tweet her at.
At Lizlet.
And I'm Rudy Jashan, at Rudy on Twitter. And this is Timey-Wimey TV, our bi-tri-weekly podcast on all things related to our favorite genre of science fiction, fantasy, time travel.
The time travel genre, yes.
Or the general bending of time. We're pretty loose.
We've gotten pretty loose with it occasionally. We've gone to the parallel universes. We've looked at, like, you know, time freezing. Eventually, we're just going to do a big, long, epic episode about out of this world.
Yeah, that's true. I was actually thinking of a dumb joke about, like there's this one time travel thing where a lady was late for 5 minutes for her train, and then you saw two divergent. See, that qualifies.
I would do an episode on sliding doors.
Oh, good. She picked up my reference.
Oh, sliding doors, and I go way back. In one universe, she has short hair. One universe, she has long hair. And which universe is the one that ends tragically? You'll never guess.
Oh, my God.
That movie's actually pretty good. I think What?
No.
What? Rudy, of all the movies that we've seen and we're going to discuss today, that is...
It is better than the movies I have seen.
Yes.
For this episode.
Yes.
We have seen things, no man.
We have been...
Or a woman.
We have been to a place, people.
Rutger Hauer's speech at the end of Blade Runner, I can feel him.
Except in the opposite way.
Yes.
Speaking of things we did or did not see, so neither of us made it to Comic-Con this year, which...
Boo earns
indeed. It's a great tragedy. But that didn't stop the Internet from telling us all about what happened.
Yes.
Which is
That's why you're flirting with the Internet. Hey, Internet.
Yeah.
You're looking good. Tell me more.
Oh, I'll flirt with you for spoilers all the time. I mean the general you. Rudy has no spoilers to offer me. There was the Doctor Who panel in Hall H, big time party for apparently everyone involved.
Yes.
Anyone who made it in, congratulations, because it seemed like you had a pretty good time. I'm looking at a recap from tour.com right now. Shout out to my friend Karen, who was handling coverage for that illustrious website. But a couple big clips were screened of upcoming episodes. Promise of mucho, mucho Daleks in... going forward.
Yes.
In season 7. No air date.
No air date.
But episode titles.
Episode titles. Once again, Moffat continues his run of coming on with the most awesome title names by basically giving us what we want.
Yes. I believe it's opening with a Western. Opening with a Western episode that they shot in Spain for a true American Western authenticity.
I don't think that's what it's opening with.
Yeah?
I thought it was opening with a Dalek episode.
Oh, you're right. It is opening with a Dalek episode. What is the Dalek episode called again?
Something of the Daleks.
Great.
It's my guess.
Oh, goodness. We don't get paid to do this all podcast.
All of the Daleks.
It's worth knowing.
All of the Daleks.
All of the Daleks. But the Western episode is a episode entitled A Town Called Mercy.
Mm-hmm.
And the description I have here says, the excerpt from the episode featured the Doctor, Amy, and Rory strolling into an old West bar where the Doctor soon found himself quickly sized up by an undertaker and, surprisingly, instantly recognized as an alien. In addition, there's going to be an episode entitled Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, which
brought a tremendous cheer from me, who was not even in that hall.
Yes.
But that's basically what
you were just like looking at the Twitters and you're like, holy crap.
I was like, we had another summary from Bleeding Cool. And they were just like, Moffat apparently said, like, we like to give people what they want. For example, dinosaurs on a spaceship. So here's a clip. And it actually begins with dinosaurs. It says, title, dinosaurs on a spaceship.
Wonderful.
And you know what happens in it?
There are dinosaurs on a spaceship.
Oh my God. And you know what the Doctor says when he sees it?
What do you say?
Run!
Ah!
Of course.
That's so wonderful.
That's so Doctor.
That makes me really happy. Say something interesting for the 2 seconds it takes me to look up what the actual Dalek episode is called, because I mean,
the greatest thing is also they put up there was they did the very beginning of the entire series,
mm-hmm.
In the Dalek episode, where they did it. And I think this is one thing that Moffat's good at and wish he did more of, where he rushes through a bunch of scenes. He has, like, he really communicates a few big ideas to get to the point of where the action is. So apparently, in a single moment, he picks up Nefertiti, another guy, and then grabs the pawns, and by accident grabs the pawns' father, Rory's father.
Sure.
Played by, and this actually got the crowd excited, because we've seen a lot of crossover from Potter fans who have grown up to look for another silly young man to follow.
Yes.
Have crossed over to Doctor Who, and so it's going to be played by the gentleman who played Ron's dad.
Oh, yeah! Shoot, I know his name.
Well, his name in real life is Williams.
Oh, that's right.
So everyone was like, yay! Sure, coincidence. But everyone's pretty excited to see him there playing yet another befuddled dad of a main character's best friend.
Well, I mean, there's been a number of really good casting announcements, like Diana Rigg and Rachel Sterling.
Yeah,
that's like as playing mother and daughter as they are in real life.
Yeah.
By the way, sports fans, if you like British television and or attractive young ladies making out, Rudy, you don't have to say anything. You can be there very dignified.
I've just been nodding my head very seriously as you've been saying this.
Yeah, but there's a 3-part miniseries called Tipping the Velvet, which was written by Andrew Davies, who also he's done a ton of adaptations of classic British literature. And this time he takes it a little racier, and this time it's Keeley Hawes and Rachel Sterling discovering their lady sensuality together.
Ooh.
It's very good. I mean, just on a pure abstract level, it's actually a really interesting, like, bit of British television. But if you like watching attractive young ladies make out, that happens.
I do like watching.
I'm wooing you with it because I'm wooing you and our humble listeners with it because it's also just good television.
It's a trap you're making. You're like, ooh, ladies making out. Wait a minute. I feel like I'm getting educated by this thing, being enlightened and having exposed to literatures.
It is part of a trap. Anyways, Rachel Sterling hasn't done a lot, but she did star in that and she's quite cute.
Yeah.
I've looked up the episode names. Thank you for the stall. The first episode will be entitled Asylum of the Daleks.
Yeah, I was right. It's something of the Daleks.
Something Daleks. Then Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, followed by A Town Called Mercy. And then the fourth episode will be entitled Cubed.
Please tell me John DeLancey's showing up.
Well, it's like a cube.
Oh, wow. Please tell me the Borg are showing up. No, wait. I'm reading that comic.
You want to use that as your transition?
Is that what we have next on our agenda?
It could be. I mean, the only other two things to mention are that there from the panel there was no real commentary on Jenna Louise Coleman, who's going, you know, the new companion who will be joining us at Christmas.
They are really playing that close to the
To the chest. We don't even have like a character name on her,
right?
Which and is very weird.
It is very weird, and or we're going to see a big hiatus. Is my fear.
You think?
Nah.
Well, I mean,
they start recording with her though.
They have started shooting her with her, yeah. So it's like, I mean, in theory, they could go take a break. You know, it's like they do their fall run whenever the hell that starts. Do, you know, take like maybe a month or two for in a Christmas episode.
Right.
Then start in like March next year.
Is she supposed to be in the Christmas episode?
She's supposed to be introduced in the Christmas episode. I think like the fall block ends with the big Amy Rory goodbye, whatever form, tearful or otherwise, that might take.
Right.
And then we go.
And they seem to be backpedaling. Before they were like, oh, it's going to be tragic, it's tragic. And now they seem to be saying, no, it's great, it's great.
Well, that's kind of, I feel like that's, I think they're, it sounds like it's a very permanent end. I don't know. I mean, it sounds like they're trying to reduce expectations or something.
Really? Because I've, like, one thing that also came out of Comic-Con, I saw a blurb on Bleeding Cool,
mm-hmm.
that he sort of, no, maybe it was Ionite. One of the others said, basically, like, they cut a clip from Muffet saying, oh, it's not the end of the Pawns. Like, it's not a final end of the Pawns. We have a time travel show, for God's sake. Like, it was, like, he really left the door open. And that's what I'm saying. There's a surprise. There was something about it not, like, oh, no, it's a very sweet ending, or who knows? It's.
I mean, we're not going to know until we see it. Yeah. Like, I mean, well, until we start making very, as educated guesses as we can make. But right. Yeah, like, I mean, I feel like it's one of those things where, I mean, no spoilers for Dark Knight Returns, but when I saw it this weekend, there were a couple of twists that when they happened, I was like, wait. Oh, that's right. Somebody said that was going to happen like 2 years ago.
Right.
And then there was like, but then like the publicity machine had backpedaled from it.
Right.
And if you were at all a big Dark Knight Returns like follower during the last couple of years, you probably know what I'm talking about in this case, but no spoilers. Anyways, the important point is I'm not going to buy into whatever the publicity machine is saying because they're either trying to manipulate the audience for their own purposes, or they don't honestly know.
I actually don't listen to anything Moffat says because Moffat lies.
Moffat lies.
Like, it's been two seasons and Moffat lies.
Yeah.
Moffat's an ass.
Yeah, but he's good
at...
He's our ass. He's good at the writerings. And also, speaking of Comic Con, continuing our Comic Con catch up, if you haven't really delved into the amounts of ridiculous things that happened while our three stars were running around San Diego.
Yes.
You missed out.
Literally, there's a great clip of them running around San Diego.
There's them running around San Diego. There are photos of them posed with the Ninja Turtles. There is an extended video clip of them singing as best they can a large chunk of Bohemian Rhapsody. There is...
bicycle cab.
Well, they did it on the bicycle cab, and then they tried to recreate it for an audience.
Wow.
And then they also did an episode of the Nerdist channel series, Celebrity Bowling.
Yes.
Which I've not watched yet, but from what I understand, Matt Smith remains his usual uncoordinated self.
I was going to say there was, like, the one thing that really struck me on the weekend is that they were running around, and either they have a really good PR person who told them, like, where to be and where to go, which may be part of the case, but, like, you got to say kudos for them for showing up. They actually showed up at the Doctor Who gathering.
Really?
Yeah, the Doctor Who Tumblr group.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, they organized it, and they completely blew everyone's mind, because no one thought they were going to be
there. Yeah.
So, it's that kind of thing, which, like, you know, as much as we poke fun at them, and particularly for Matt Smith, like, will he stay, will he go, make up your mind, young man, already.
They seem to genuinely love the job they were doing.
Yeah.
And it's and that's one of the wonderful things about Comic-Con, is that it brings that out in people.
Yeah.
I think there's, like, some quote I read from like, the Doctor Who panel where Matt Smith was like, if the world was like Comic-Con all the time, wouldn't it be a lovely place? And, yeah. I mean, there's part of it that's got real truth to it.
Right.
And, yeah, so we can segue now to your Doctor Who comic.
Ooh, speaking of Doctor Who.
Speaking of Doctor Who.
And the mashing of different franchises in a single location.
Rudy forgot to inform me that there is a new Doctor Star Trek
responsibility.
I don't know. I arbitrarily like to make things your job.
Retroactively.
Rudy forgot to tell me that there was a new Star Trek Doctor Who.
Liz.
What?
There's a new issue.
Oh man. Issue 3 of Star Trek Next Generation / Doctor Who.
Yes, the proper order, because otherwise they could not publish it in Britain.
Yes.
And it continues with more fan wank. It's still a fan wank thing, but our complaint last time, it was fan wank that wasn't really going anywhere.
Yes, it was moving at a snail's pace.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody hit the gas in this episode.
Really?
Yes. I'm going to be spoilerific.
No, don't do that.
Don't do that.
Well, slightly spoiler. I have still haven't read it.
You haven't read it.
Yes, he showed gentle listeners. He showed me pictures on his phone, and those pictures were delightful.
They were delightful, but they have to know.
Okay, tell them
like 2 weeks out.
I'm telling them. You can tell them three things they need to know.
Three things you need to know.
Yes.
The Kirk and what's called Sixth Doctor. Fourth Doctor cover is not just a cover, as originally suspected by everybody.
Uh-huh.
There's
a flashback to the Captain Kirk meeting the Fourth Doctor.
Yes. Okay. There is every reference you could freaking hope for to be made during that encounter.
Oh my goodness.
Oh yes.
For all you Fourth Doctor fans out there in the world.
Right. There's more clues about kind of what's going on, where it's not just time travel related. There's something else going on, because the main point is the Doctor's remembering things that he knows he never experienced. So that's an intriguing possibility. Ooh. You already mentioned in the second issue. And the final image, you're like, makes you gasp. I showed the final image to Liz, and she went, what was it you said?
I think I just made a noise.
I think you just went, oh shit, like in a very enthusiastic way.
I do tend to, when Star Trek Next Generation is involved, like, I do make very primal fangirl noises.
It is still the biggest fan wank out there, but at least now it's, I mean, I was actually genuinely surprised. Like, then that's what I wanted. Well,
I think here's my big question for you is, when we were talking about it last week, like, we were kind of on the fence about whether or not this was something you needed to, like, should people be buying this issue by issue, or should they just wait for the trade? And at that point, we were very much in the, if this doesn't pick up, it needs to be, you should just wait for the trade and buy it all once. Right. Where do you stand now?
I'm going to say definitely pick up this issue. Okay. I mean, you can actually pick up this issue. And that's part of the problem. Everyone knew that it's going to be the Cybermen and Borg. They heavily promoted the Cybermen team up with the Borg to fight Doctor Who and the Enterprise.
Right.
And so, like, the first issue, while fun, was like this long thing to get us to, hey, look, the Doctor is involved. And then the second issue was like this long thing, which had no bearing on anything about fish people and underwater mining, which...
I mean, I love me a good underwater mining storyline, so...
You know what? On Next Generation, you would have enjoyed an underwater mining storyline. But not when you've got Doctor Who around the corner.
Nope.
And so, it was like, okay, it's fun, really well-written characters. This issue, I was like, you know, they've got a lot of stuff going in there. It's brilliant. They hit the, both the old Enterprise characters and the new ones. I can't say enough great things about this. Like, just buy this issue, even if you don't buy any other issue, is what I would say.
Nice. And it's available digitally. Exactly. So you don't even need to leave your house. You can just buy a Comixology. Will happily take your money dollars for the opportunity.
Or the IDW comic book application. And they might actually put this out separately in another Doctor Who, Star Trek app.
Oh, okay.
And I'm going to pick up, like, this has convinced me to go pick up the next issue.
Okay. And I definitely plan on reading this one now. Yeah. And now that I know it exists.
Yeah. It's I will tweet you every time I find out one.
Well, there you go. That'll work out nicely.
Now that I know it's my job.
Yeah, now that you have, like, very few responsibilities.
It's true. I'm a gad about town.
Yeah. But speaking of things you can buy, I wanted to call out two recent things I found on via the interwebs. At the Nidorama store, the Nido shop, if you don't follow Nidorama, they're a blog kind of collecting the random ephemeral stuff of the web. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a pretty fun follow. Like, usually I often find some delightful things there. But they have a poster that is things I learned from Doctor Who. And it's like an important, like, guide to things that you need to know. Like, psychic paper is an excellent way to get in anywhere, and when faced with a Slovene, vinegar is handy. And in the text I'm looking at, they've misspelled Slovene, but hopefully that's fixed on the actual poster. Anywho, so we'll have a link to that in the post for tomorrow, when you listen to this, but if you just Google things I learned from Doctor Who, you will find this, where this website lives on, where this poster can be found on the internets. The other thing I wanted to call out is I bought a t-shirt, Rudy.
I know this. You showed me this t-shirt.
It's a really great t-shirt. It's the website Her Universe has begun, I mean, they've been around for a little bit, I think, doing, with their line basically of geeky shirts for ladies, with very lady-friendly cuts and, like, shapings and all that. And so they have Star Trek, Star Wars, your usual assortment of, nerd culture things. And they just recently launched a line of Doctor Who shirts, including a really great, the one I purchased, which is a really great, Van Gogh TARDIS blowing up.
It is she brought it out to me, folks, and it was very delightful. I was like, wow, I wish there was a male version of that. Yeah. And I realized, no.
Well, I'm sure there's a male version of it, but, like, I want to call it up because it's, you know, as someone who buys not a ton of nerd shirts, but my portion, like, it's nicely made. The cut, again, like, you know, it's a flattering scoop neck. It's very nice. It's a very nice shirt. Heruniverse.com, I believe, will take care of your needs there if you are in the need of nerd shirts. And you probably are. Come on. Come on, ladies.
Well, actually, there was a great article in Kotaku.
Really?
Not about this shirt and so on, but talking about, like, she was trying to point out fashion items, like geek fashion items, particularly because they were pointing out that if you go to Hot Topic, where a lot of people go get their 80s slash nerd slash thing, like, if you did, like, that's the closest store you can go to for that kind of stuff. You know, the guys' shirts, they all have that stuff.
Right.
But if you turn to, and she nailed it so on the head, like, you turn to the female section, it's all, like, whatever's the latest Tim Burton movie, and whatever is the latest Johnny Depp movie, and you know, the same old, and pinks and stuff, with no recognition that, you know what, girls like Star Trek too, or you know, they like Doctor Who, or they also played, you know, they also played Super Mario. It doesn't have to be like the same thing, the same old, same old.
Yeah, and like, I think there's something also to really be said, like, what I liked about the Her Universe shirts, and I looked at some of the other ones while I was making my order, and like, there was I remember one, like, a really early artful Battlestar shirt that was kind of like Starbuck is an angel.
Oh yeah.
It was very artful. I like that word in describing it. And it kind of like riffed on her tattoo and riffed on like the, you know, kind of the direction that character took in the last season.
Okay.
And if I didn't hate the direction that the character took in the last season, I probably would have bought it because
She's an angel!
I did really like the shirt. I thought it was really, like, well-designed. It's just a matter of, like, this is the one problem with nerd shirts is that, you know, it's half aesthetic and half personal meaning. Like,
yes, it's true.
But still, heruniverse.com. I'm not being paid to say that. I gave them my money, but if they hear this and they want to give me send me more shirts
or money, we will gladly accept your money.
More, yes, but Rudy is just saying that because he probably won't get to wear the shirts.
I won't get to wear nothing.
But you can give them to that lovely lady friend of yours.
I can give it to my lovely lady friend Casey McKinnon.
Yes,
if they would like to send shirts to Casey McKinnon
or me
or Liz Shannon Miller.
Yes. Different sizes on those shirts. Just let's be pretty clear about that. So I think that brings us to the meat of our episode, which I think we called it last week, Netflix Time Travel Roulette.
Yes, Netflix Time Travel Roulette.
Wherein, basically, most of you likely have Netflix subscriptions, or you have some equivalent of Netflix subscriptions.
For those living under a rock, Netflix is a service where you can subscribe to and have access to movies either on DVD format or instantly over the interwebs.
Yes. And the thing about Netflix is that they occasionally get some A-list titles in there, but they also have like a huge back catalog.
Right.
Just like really random like B-movies and things that you would never really imagine yourself sitting down and watching. And
I know I didn't imagine watching these movies until we decided to do this crazy endeavor.
Yes. So essentially, like, as we are in a slight dry period, we're still waiting, you know, it's a couple more weeks, another month or two actually, until Looper comes out. Like,
that's true.
We don't know when Doctor Who is returning.
What's it called? Didn't they pass on that series we were so looking forward to seeing?
Oh, yeah. Joey Dakota.
Did they pass?
They did. We have to... Well, maybe somebody will send... We'll try to...
Maybe Netflix will pick up Joey Dakota.
Maybe Netflix would pick up Joey Dakota, and then we could talk about it. But until Netflix realizes that what America needs, and deep within its heart, is a teen drama about a documentarian who travels back in time to have sex with Kurt Cobain. Until that time, we've decided to kind of like, you know, cause we, you know, whenever you browse through Netflix, there's always that moment of you're like looking at the available titles and you're like, I could watch that. That could be interesting.
I really did not think this about the movies we saw.
Well, but it's more of a thing. Like I definitely have caught a couple of things and I'd be like, we do a podcast about time travel. I feel like I should pay attention to that.
Yeah, there's occasional movies you go, okay, that looks good. And there are apparently some really good ones in there.
Yes.
One we were thinking about watching Time Crimes.
Yes.
But I've heard really good things about it.
Yes. Though it is another language, so you have to read subtitles.
Right.
But basically in this first round of Netflix time travel roulette, we each agreed to take one movie that neither we hadn't seen before and just try to watch it just to see, like, kind of see, like, basically the experiment is essentially, is there good stuff in the bowels of Netflix related to time travel?
And let me tell you something. Sitting down with you digitally to pick out these movies was the best part of this entire experience.
It was. There was some triple dog daring involved.
Yes.
And also, I feel like we both took the unconventional choice, given the fact that I probably would enjoy a ABC Family girl comedy, whereas you would probably enjoy a late 80s Quantum Leap-esque dude drama. Instead, I got to watch the Quantum Leap-esque dude drama. You got the ABC Girl movie.
I got the ABC Girl movie, and I think I got to watch it with lovely Casey McKinnon.
Yes.
Who, I got to tell you, she's the best DVD commentary track you could ask for stupid movies. Mm-hmm. She kept gasping and shaking her head in terms of, like, what was happening on the screen. I think I took a bullet for you. That's all I'm putting out there.
I will say. So let's start with Rudy's movie, which was Her Future Boyfriend.
Her Future Boyfriend.
My Future Boyfriend. I apologize. I will admit that I once upon a couple, like maybe a year ago, I saw it. I tried to watch five. I started trying to watch it, and I just kind of hit this point where I was like, I'm not ready for this. This is too good for me.
It's a drinking game movie.
Yeah. So okay, quickly tell us what My Future Boyfriend's about.
My Future Boyfriend is that in the year 3100 something.
Sure.
You actually begin where you see like blowtorch cutting into metal, and says the year 3100 something.
Sure.
This clothed, you know, in investigative suits, people burst into this room. It looks archaic. It looks like a underwater shipwreck kind of thing, and open up a case there where they find stacks of money.
Sure.
Printed in 2012.
Ooh.
And key element of the plot. And a romance novel called Forbidden Love. And when one of the people who are in these contamination suits, which apparently have not seen any advancement in technology for the last millennia, when they go, what does it mean? Forbidden Love.
What is this thing we call love?
And followed by the other, who turns out to be the male lead, going, I don't know. And so the entire story is about how this male lead is fascinated by this artifact of the past. And that, and when he queries the computers about what does love mean, the computers go, that is forbidden. Repeat, that is forbidden. And when he asks, what does forbidden mean? Because apparently everyone's a retard in the future.
Aww.
Or why is this information forbidden? It's like, that information is also forbidden. Whereupon Fred Willard, I believe it is.
Yeah. Unexpected Fred Willard is unexpected.
We learned that this weekend.
Aww, topical.
Yes, topical. And that was as she added a whole kind of weird tinge to what I'm seeing when I was watching it. Where he comes in going,
Fred Willard knows all about forbidden love.
Exactly. It was a lot of stuff about that. Basically, he kind of dissuades him from going back in time. Well, like, go back in time to figure out what does this forbidden love mean. Particularly back in time to meet the author of the book, who we also see is this, works for a tabloid magazine.
Played by the adorable Sarah Rue.
By the adorable Sarah Rue, who is adorable in this.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, he goes back in time to meet her, and because she works at a tabloid magazine, she thinks, like, oh, he's the new crazy subject matter. And, you know, he asks her awkward questions like, what does love mean? And what does sex mean? And you get to see that all those enjoyable things that apparently we've lost in the future. The
future sounds lame.
The future, that's the basic name. The future's lame because they've lost all sense of emotion. He was playing it Mr. Spock, but if Mr. Spock was retarded, that was, I'm sorry I used that word. That's not appropriate. Mentally challenged. If Mr. Spock was dropped on his head by his human mother, this
is... Wow. I like that you called her out as human.
Yes. It's well, clearly the Vulcan mother would never have dropped her child. Only the incompetent human would have.
Somebody got just racist right there. Straight up racist. So I'm guessing Sarah Rue teaches our young man about what love is.
Kind of.
Because he wants to know what love is. He needs her to show him.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. But so here's the thing with this movie. I mean, it was really dumb. Like, the biggest problem is, like, you look at what the future is in this movie, and you were, like, struck by, you know, really? 1,000 years? And this is where we are? Where we at? It felt like we achieved the 80s idea of the future. The plot points is, like, you know, a lot of, like, oh, look, he doesn't know that alcohol makes him drunk, or things like that. But they kept pulling their punches.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Like it, there was, I mean, they kept asking, like, what does sex mean? There's no moment where that comes up after the first jokes about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's
no love scene.
There is no love scene. They do, I mean, they obviously kiss towards the end. But the biggest problem with it is, like, he never realizes why love is forbidden.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no point where they actually say, Like
they never explain why the future is banned love.
Like, that's the thing. Like, this is why this movie disappoints, right? There's movies that disappoint you because they go exactly as you imagined they would.
Sure.
This movie did not even achieve that. You know? Like, I thought what was going to happen was, like, this point where he gets so enraged by the fact that she is getting engaged to another guy.
Oh, man.
That he'll learn that, like, the reason love was banned, along with war, genocide, and all these other stuff, like other things, anger, was because that love is could be a source for all those things.
Sure.
And so on. But he hasn't learned that. He just goes, I love you. I learned to love you. And you're like, you learned to love her like halfway through the movie, dude, when you're making, locking lips with her and shoving your tongue down her throat.
Oh, my.
And yes. And with Fred Willard waggling his bushy eyebrows at you.
Wait, so Fred Willard also comes back to the past?
Yes. At some point, he gets arrested. Our hero gets arrested.
Oh, okay.
And Fred Willard goes, hey, you missed your deadline. So I showed up. By the way, I love how casual the time travels in this thing, which is like and literally there's that moment at the end where he's like, at the very, I don't know, should I spoil this movie for people?
Spoiler alert for my future boyfriend.
Yeah, spoiler alert. Like, there's this whole thing, like, there was a scene that the moment I saw it, I knew how this thing was going to end.
Uh-huh.
But again, it's that painfulness of where everybody takes so long to get there.
Oh.
So, like, she says, like, when asked, like, how did you meet your fiancé, he's like, oh, it was just pure chance. On this day, Valentine's Day, 2 years ago, I was walking down the boardwalk when the wind swept my hat, which had a hilarious moment of that where literally her character on the screen goes, oh, my hat!
Oh, wait, so let me guess. Can I guess?
Go ahead.
He time travels back to that day and keeps her from meeting her fiancé, and said they end up doing it.
Yeah, well, you don't even see them do it. In fact, he's the one that picks up her hat instead of the fiancé.
Wow, way to cock block, man.
Yeah, it is like the most, I mean, I maybe give kudos. The best cock block ever.
That's kind of a dick move, though. Like, on a number, like, it takes away her choice. And
oh,
like,
yeah. It also makes this, like this, I gotta say, it makes this lady look really, really silly.
It's just like, if any guy who had picked up her hat that day,
yeah, she would fall in love with.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that was a thing. And, like, you know, mind you, she's also a lady that's completely charmed that he gave her a rock of quartz. But and they fall massively in love with no real reason of why, that within 48 hours. How do we know it's 48 hours? Because he's told. And this is the part that boggled my mind. Like, the first thing Fred Willard tells him is, like, now you only have 48 hours to do what you do. And I'm like, it's a time machine! There is no...
I do love me an artificial time clock.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of that. And then at the end, he's like, Fred was like, well, I'm afraid you're infected now with love. So if you want to go back, you can.
Well, thanks, Fred Willard.
And, yeah, exactly. But I got Fred Willard. The only guy who's in there who points out when he's like, is like, what's it called? That he points out that our hero goes like, oh, but you know, her destiny is supposed to be with that guy, because ever since she met her, she knew it. Oh, ho hum. And Fred was literally like, you are aware we have a time machine, you know, like,
aww.
Says it much more gently to him, but like, really? We have it, like, oh no, you can't go back in time to cockblock this dude. But there was one thing that surprised me. There was one thing I thought, like, and again, this is a pulling your punches type thing.
Sure.
So remember that stack of money. I was pleasantly surprised when that came up again, because one of the first things he does cleverly is go, oh, I have a stack of this money. I'll just use that when I travel back in time.
Sure.
Except it's from 2012, and this movie came out in 2011.
Oh.
And so, mind you, this is the part that also freaked me out. Like, it was a clever idea that with after he spends it, it falls in the hands of
nefarious men.
No, in the hands of the government, going like, this is here's some, a sample counterfeit that says 2012, and then they catch it, like, and it becomes like this thing of them trying to track it down. Like, oh, that's clever. Except for the fact, I can never believe that within 5 hours of spending a dollar, the government's notified about a false bill.
Certainly not for a dollar.
Well, like, in this case, $100 bill.
Okay, but yeah, no, I hear your point, though.
But that was interesting. And then later on, as they were building this up, they began realizing, like, wait a minute, like, there's a signature on it from someone who's not the Secretary of State or the Secretary of Treasury yet.
Mm.
But rumor says he will be. And so they begin pacing the clues, and there's a point where they realize, oh shit, this guy's from the future. And then they do anything about it.
Sure.
Yeah. But it's like, oh, look, money, that's an interesting challenge here. Anyway, I go on and on about all the awful things this movie has. It's just painful to watch.
Was there any real chemistry with the actors? Or
no, well, I'm trying to think of that movie. Like, there's a movie where a guy is mentally challenged.
I Am Sam?
Yes. Thank you.
Oh, dear.
It's like
that's not the movie you want to invoke when you're talking about a romantic comedy.
He comes across, like, I know they're trying to come across like he's quirky or so on.
Right.
But it's like, you really feel like, what happened in the future? Did we, all the radiation from a comet?
Well,
hit?
I mean, Idiocracy.
Right, but that's the joke about Idiocracy, right? I mean, that's the point.
So, do you feel the world of Idiocracy is more logically consistent?
Yes. Liz, he works at the World Center of Science. They keep cutting away, every time he's in the future, they cut away to a building that...
Please tell me that there's on-screen text that says World Center of Science.
There's a giant sign on it that tells you this is the World Center of Science is here.
Oh, man. That's wonderful.
It is... And apparently the design came from the late 80s again. It's terrible. That kind of thing keeps happening where you're like... Or... And a lot of the classic, like, romantic comedy jokes that are not actually funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, it's the biggest problem with romantic comedies in theaters even these days, where it's like, oh, look, he ate a beignette and he has powdery sugar all over his face. Isn't he adorable? But all you think is, please, lady, put him down, you know, like...
Wow.
And, like, you're like, why are you falling up? Like, why are you falling in love with him, Saru? Like, why are you doing that?
Well, lady's gotta take care of her puppy. I don't know. That makes no sense.
You
know,
no.
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 No. Speaking of the late 80s.
Yes.
So, I took on Time Stalkers.
Which has the most awesome poster ever.
I wouldn't have agreed to watch it, except that the tagline for it is, it's way past time to kill the future. I just want to say that one more time. It's way past time to kill the future.
You got to say it like the, in a world voice, you know.
All right, let me. It's way past time to kill the future.
Yes. Now there it's like 10 billion times.
Oh, my God. I don't have a ton to say about this. Basically, the basic plot is there's this history professor who's super into the Wild West. His son and wife get tragically killed in a car accident, cut to however long later, and he discovers this old photograph from the Wild West era where the guy in the photograph seems to be holding a gun from the 1980s.
Right.
So, you know, 100 years before its time. So he starts investigating this, and then this lady, played by Lauren Hutton, shows up, and she's like, oh, hey, your investigation interests me. And so she starts investigating with him, but then turns out she's a time traveler. And then she just keeps popping back to the 1880s looking for the same guy, the guy with the gun, who's played by Klaus Kinski, or shoot. That's not good. I'm going to lose my nerdy German film badge for that one.
Oh, because you couldn't identify somebody in the film Time Stalkers.
No, but he's like a Werner Herzog guy.
Oh.
Klaus Kinski, I think, is the name. He was in Wings of Desire, I think. I don't know. He's not very good. No one's very good in this movie. It's kind of just a... It's not bad, necessarily. Like, I'm sure if I had seen it in, like, 1992 on cable, at the age of, like, one or so, because of how I'm, like, 16. And not very good at math, apparently. If I had seen it, like...
You apparently are from the future, and you work at the World Center of Science.
I do work at the World Center of Science. Beignets everywhere! But
you were saying.
I was saying, yeah. So it's like, so the lady pops back for it. Basically, the deal is, like, she's from the future. She's trying to stop this time traveler from killing, essentially, her great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandpa, who is, like, an advisor to Grover Cleveland, I think. I don't remember exactly. I watched it, like, 3 hours ago, and I can't remember exactly what happened in it, which is clearly a sign that this movie is really solid.
Well, didn't you tell me the first time through you actually fell asleep?
Oh, yeah, I fell asleep. I was trying to watch it last night, and I totally fell asleep. Today, I also tried to watch. I did not fall asleep watching it at 7 o'clock at night, which was good. But the point remains, it's
Ploddingly?
It's plotting. It's just very plotting. Like, you know, there's, like, the main character isn't, like, the main driver of the plot at all. Like, he's, like, interested in finding out what's going on with this gun. But really, the main character of the movie is Lauren Hutton, like, trying to stop her great-great-great-great-grandfather from being killed and, like, doing her time travel future stuff. And that's cool. Like, if the movie had been about her, that'd been interesting. But instead, it's just all anchored around this really boring professor guy. Who doesn't, and this is, I wrote this down because this was really important for me to note. He doesn't get to go back to the past until an hour and 20 minutes into this hour and a half long movie.
Wow.
Like, she whisks him back for the climax, and then they stop Klaus Kinski. I'm sorry about continually mispronouncing that. They stop him, and then they come back to the future, or come back to the 1980s. She's going to go back to the future, and to this movie's credit, like, there's no, like, huge, like, romance between them. Instead, what she does is she sends him back to the morning when his son and wife were killed.
Okay.
And then he's able to rescue them, and his wife goes, "It's like you knew that was going to happen." Because, like, the car crashes without them in it. And then the end of the movie.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's not... The things I will mention about it are... The time travel effects are pretty bad in that, like, essentially when you travel through time in this movie, you get, like, a little red ring of fire, like, circles around you. The other thing... And also, like... There's this, like, one scene transition they're constantly using when they go back and forth between the past and the future, or the present, rather, because right. You never see the future. It's only the past and the present. But when they go back and forth between them, there's, like, this amazing, like, whoosh, like, a cut. It's like something out of He-Man. Like, it's like, you know, when, like, the logo would pop forward.
Do you know what's funny?
What?
I was just thinking, when you talking about that ending, It reminded me of the ending of the Masters of the Universe movie.
Really?
Yeah, that was the whole...
I haven't seen that.
There is... Oh, Liz.
Oh, man.
We gotta talk about time travel in the Masters of the Universe movie.
There's time travel in the Masters of the Universe? Yeah,
there is.
Man.
Not only time travel, time and space travel.
Ooh. Isn't the guy who played Tom Paris on Star Trek Voyager in Masters of the Universe?
Yes, he is.
Oh, I could watch that movie.
I could. It's got Dolph Lundgren.
Okay, well, maybe we'll watch Masters of the Universe.
And Frank Langella.
We're watching Masters of the... We're going to continue this trend of catching
terrible
up.
Terrible movies.
Terrible movies that we're catching up on. Anyways, if you wanted to watch Time Stalkers or My Future Boyfriend... Both of them are available on Netflix Instant.
I gotta say two more things about My Future Boyfriend.
Okay, go.
It's funny that you talk about transitions, because that had the same problem.
Really?
The only marker that you were in the future is that you saw the World Center of Science.
The World Center of Science. Every time you mention it, it gets funnier.
And actually, that was, like, the biggest thing for me, was, like, there is a point where, like, they show you the year, like, the literal beginning is they show you that year 3000 whatever.
Right.
Then you see, like, he lives off of the funny line, I put a quote line of, like, well... a lot can change in 1,000 years.
And what?
And you're supposed to go like, even though you, if you're an idiot, you would know what this happenings thing, but it's supposed to be that moment you realize, oh, wait, things have changed in 1,000 years because they're walking across the Pacific Ocean.
Wait, did they change? Okay, sorry, no, they're walking across the Pacific Ocean.
Well, but which is now a desert, which someone wittingly points out that things change over 1,000 years. Then it cuts back to 2011, where we meet our female heroine, you know, and see her kooky life and all that stuff.
Sure.
And then you see the world center of science and then realize, oh, wait, we're in the future again. Because there's a world center of science.
I feel like that's the thing. Like, the transition between the past and the future is, in the really great time travel movies, it's always one of the coolest parts. Like, Terminator is so good at that.
Right.
Both Terminator and Terminator 2, like, you know, everything's so grounded in the present, but they do show, like, the glimpses of the future. It's so well executed.
Well, it's well executed because it's, in Terminator, it's done as the dreams of the survivors.
Yeah.
You know, that is so hard for, I mean, like, and that's why it's so shocking every time they work, it's a nightmare every time they wake up. I'm wondering if there's an argument made that it's outside of those kind of memory aspects. It's really hard to have a multi-timeline story.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe, I'm trying to recall, there probably is one that I've enjoyed. I mean, Doctor Who may have done it several times with people in different time periods working together to do stuff. But anyway, but that's one thing. The second thing I want to point out.
Okay.
Is that, you know, this, I hate movies where it's so like, in the future, we have banned emotion.
Ugh.
You know, like some like silly things. Previously, my worst movie for that was that Guntakata movie with Christian Bale.
Oh, Equilibrium.
Equilibrium.
Oh yeah, Equilibrium's a good time.
Oh. Like, this made me enjoy Equilibrium.
Wow.
Wow. That was like
really... Well, at least like with Equilibrium, like they're all supposed to be taking drugs.
Yes, that's true. I wish I was taking drugs when I watched this movie.
Aw.
And I hope you wish you'd watched drugs during Time Stalkers.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
There's nothing a good glass of whiskey won't cure.
Yes, these are new drinking game movies.
Oh, man. So, we put out a call to people on the internets quickly to ask what they would recommend in terms of terrible time travel media available on the Netflix. Our good friend Jay Bushman, Old Man Bushman, has a big shout out for Beastmaster 2.
Which makes me want to see Beastmaster 2 because
I've never seen Beastmaster 2, but I don't understand how there's time travel in it.
That I need to explore it just because there's time travel involved in it. Like, yeah. How did you put time travel in it?
I feel like Beast, if there's any movie that sounds like a good companion piece to Masters of the Universe, then it might be Beastmaster 2.
I'll watch Beastmaster 2 and you watch Masters of the Universe.
Okay, that sounds fair. So we've got next, so we'll the Netflix roulette will continue. As we can, it's not so much roulette because we both keep taking bullets.
It's like chat roulette in that way.
Yeah, good point. And then also Andy Norval comments, how's about terrible time travel TV on Netflix? And then Primeval, which I've never... are you my friend who defends Primeval?
I am your friend who enjoys Primeval.
That's right. I'm sorry that he... I'm sorry, Andy... Andy Norval, Rudy disagrees with you about Primeval. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
I enjoy it because it's so stupid. But when you set it to that point, and then it goes up to like glorious stages. Mm-hmm. For example, last season with Alexander Siddig. I mean, how do you...
Wait, what?
What? Alexander Siddig was in it.
What? No, I didn't know that.
Well, he's in it.
I didn't know that.
Well, now you know.
Oh, shoot.
And now you gotta watch it. Alexander Siddig.
Stupid Primeval.
Stupid Alexander Siddig.
Do I need to watch any other Primeval that's not Primeval?
Actually, that season, they basically reset the whole show. It's one of those times, like, you know, shows every now and then do that where they're like, basically, well, we're firing everybody.
Yeah.
Or completely...
And replacing it with Alexander Siddig.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like a way to vastly improve a show.
Yeah, every character is played by Alexander Siddig. It's fascinating British television.
I'll watch that.
Exploring his female sexuality.
I will watch that. Okay, so apparently I'm going to try to also watch some Primeval.
It's one of those shows I actually watch on and off.
Okay.
and it's terrible. Mm-hmm. But I, it has a soft place in my heart as the show I would have in the background when I was doing something else.
Yeah, there's something to be said for television on that, like that. I've been trying to get through a Code Academy, and I'm working on Defying Gravity right now, which is an amazing sci-fi series if you like crazy sci-fi shows that have Ron Livingston in them.
That's the hospital drama, isn't it?
No, it's Grey's Anatomy in space.
Right, that's
no, it. But there's no hospital like that. It's just Grey's Anatomy because it's about a lot of attractive people complaining about how they can't have they're complaining about their sex lives. But then they're also training for a 6-year space mission around the solar system. And also there's like a mysterious alien thing happening. It's a very weird show, but Ron Livingston is definitely in it. So there's a lot to be said for it. I believe many people call it the sexy astronaut show, and it's remembered fondly as that.
The sexy astronaut show?
Yeah. They are astronauts who are sexy.
It's probably Ron Livingston, and I'm confident in my sexuality to say that's a sexy astronaut right
that
there.
That is a sexy astronaut, Ron Livingston.
But not as sexy as Ben Browder as an astronaut.
No, but, I mean, come on. It's like, I would go Ben Browder, Ron Livingston.
George Clooney played an astronaut, but I don't know how you feel about him.
I feel very strongly about George Clooney being a sexy astronaut. But I don't feel like that. But Solaris is such a bummer movie.
Way to kill the mood, Clooney.
Yeah. It's like, I want it to be a sexy astronaut movie, but I don't... It's a bummer movie, man.
Well, you're going to have a second chance with him.
Okay.
With Sandra Bullock.
Oh, yeah. I'm really looking forward to that. What's that movie called again?
I think it's called Gravity.
Yeah, and it's Alfonso Cuarón, like, apparently, like, breaking... You know, like, apparently he's doing stuff with 3D that's never been done before. It's going to be technologically Children of Earth times 1,000 or something. I've heard really exciting things about it.
I think it's basically, I've heard it's one big continuous shot.
Yeah, exactly. And in 3D and craziness. Ugh. It's going to be amazing. I'm so excited.
Unfortunately, our show is not called Spacey Wacy, so we really should get off this topic conversation.
Yes. I'm going to go to we've got a comment on the blog, Ye Olde blog, from a new commenter, Mig. I believe relatively new. I don't recall a comment from her before. Her or him. Sorry. Mig, I don't mean to judge. But Mig commented on our episode about Safety Not Guaranteed. Because first off, she mentions the Vincent and the Doctor episode was one of my favorite 11th Doctor episodes. The only reason I haven't watched it again is so that no one notices me getting all teary-eyed at the end.
Yeah.
And he/she also agrees about our thoughts about the ending of Safety Not Guaranteed, which is to say, to put it in a quasi-spoiler-free way, we liked it, but we felt it wasn't quite as well supported by the rest of the movie as it could have been.
Right. And that it needed a few more scenes.
It needed,
or just even one scene.
One scene. He/she agreed with our interpretation of things, but it also felt like, you know, it's still a really good movie, and if you haven't seen it yet, it will really delight you in a number of ways.
Well, I think it's definitely like a movie that, I mean, it's probably out of theaters now,
mm-hmm.
but if it comes on Netflix and you haven't seen it, it's definitely like watchable.
Yeah.
Especially compared to my future boyfriend or Time Stalkers.
Oh, Time Stalkers.
The party that wants to watch it now, just to be in solidarity with you.
You know, you could give it a shot. You could do what I've done with my future boyfriend. You could watch the first 10 minutes. But it's just really slow. And there's all this Old West stuff that's not very interesting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, if you like, I'm spoiled post-Deadwood.
Maybe we should have a back-to-back showing of that with Back to the Future 3. This is how it should have been done.
Oh, man. I just want to watch Back to the Future 3, though.
That's true.
That's all I want to do now.
We should have we should organize a viewing with all our friends where we just watch Back to the Future 3 or all Back to the Futures and record it.
That'd be a fun day.
It would be a fun day.
They're all on HBO Go right now.
That's true.
Fun fact, if you subscribe to HBO and you haven't set up your HBO Go subscription, you really should. They're continually putting on a lot of great movies and TV shows. You're already paying for it because it's part of your cable, but it's included with your cable bill. And at some point, in fact, I think there are rumors that they might start charging for it.
I think this is like, I mean, that's the obvious thing.
They're not a la carte. I'm saying they'll start charging people who already subscribe to use HBO Go on top of their regular. Yeah, exactly. Anyways, that's just, it should be fine. But anyways, the important point is HBO Go.
Why did you leave us on such a downer, Liz?
HBO Go is a really great service. They have all the Back to the Futures right now. And as well as, like, basically pretty much every great HBO series in its entirety.
Yes.
So
it's funny you mentioned Deadwood, because Casey kept saying, why is Garrett Dillahunt not the lead in this movie? Like, it's like, automatically that would have made this movie better, because instead of being played as a mentally challenged, creepy man or whatever,
Garrett Dillahunt can sell that kind of that lack of intelligence.
Yeah,
you know, like, but with charm.
That lack of that cluelessness with mm-hmm. charm. Like, that's, I mean, if you, he was one of the best things about the Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Oh, he was great in that.
Yeah,
and he's he's great in pretty much everything he does.
And Deadwood and
he's really funny on Raising Hope. Like, yes. I've only seen a few episodes of it, but he's really, really funny. I do feel bad. I didn't mean to leave us on a downer note, so I will make it up to you with the Stephen Moffat Tweet of the Week.
Stephen Moffat Tweet of the Week!
This is our weekly, or our bi-weekly at this point, salute to the great Stephen Moffat, ruiner of lives, maker of television shows, and tweeter of tweets. Today's tweet is... off to L.A. Younger son convinced I can introduce him to Selena Gomez. Sometimes, apparently, Daleks aren't enough. Humph. And the important things to know about this tweet are Rudy and I initially didn't want to use it, but we couldn't find anything better because we felt that this tweet was really easy. The other thing is that he misspelled Selena Gomez, and apparently the internet made fun of him for it.
Yes, the internet made it. Or have you ever... scenes and the stuff that goes around her?
No.
Oh, like the internet, that's like one of the words that causes angry mobs to form. And
Selena Gomez?
Yes.
Well, is it because of the Bieber?
That was partly because of the Bieber.
Is she still with the Bieber?
I don't know.
Rudy, why don't you know this? Why are you not up to date on Justin Bieber's relationship?
So let me understand this. My jobs include telling you when there's a new issue of Star Trek, Next Generation, Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And the current status of Justin Bieber and Selena Gomez.
This is not a lot of stuff. I tell you, I keep you posted on a bunch of stuff.
This is true.
All I need is Justin Bieber's up-to-date relationship status, and when there's a new Doctor Who, a Star Trek Next Generation comic book for me to read.
You know what blow your mind? Justin Bieber to appear on Doctor Who playing a Starfleet cadet.
That would, in fact, blow my mind.
I think that's actually true. It would blow anybody's mind. Wait, what? This is the Star Trek video television.
But it's not actually hard at all for me to imagine Justin Bieber cameoing on an episode of Star Trek Next Generation. Because, I mean, that show was so full of random cameos like that, where it's just like...
that level.
Yeah.
Whoopi Goldberg was by far the biggest star on there. And I gotta say this, kudos for her for doing it as a fan. Like, she did it out of love for the old series.
Yeah.
Oh, and brought a great character to life.
Well, I mean, yeah, and it's very, like, I think I remember, like, reading the story she told, I think, once was, like, she was watching the original Star Trek, and she, like, runs into her mother's room, and she's like, Mama, there's a black lady on television, and she's no one's maid either.
Wow.
It's like, it's just like the basic fact of, oh my goodness, a black woman is on television and she's not playing a maid.
Right.
Of course, you could make the joke that Uhura was essentially an intergalactic secretary, but still, it's an important moment.
You take that back.
No. What does she do all day, Rudy? She answers the phone.
Communications officer.
She answers the phone.
You know, that would actually have been an awesome scene that would have blown everyone's mind if, like, that console's explodes. And she's like, give me a tricorder. I'll go fix it myself. That would have actually been, like, whatever.
Yeah.
But she did get to make out with Captain Kirk.
Yeah, she did.
In a groundbreaking moment.
Yeah. No, and I mean, I don't mean to make... I love her. I think she's a great character.
Stanley, fellow sister, I completely understand.
No, I love her. I really do. The Intergalactic Secretary joke, I think, is an old joke from the show Grace Under Fire.
Oh, boy.
There's a lot of crap in my brain that I just need to flush out one day. But thus concludes the Stephen Moffat tweet of the week. I have no idea how we got to Uhura from there.
And actually, wait, you know, I'm going to do a little kudos to a hero that passed away this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Sally Ride.
Sally Ride.
First woman in space.
It's the first woman in space.
And
first American woman in space.
First American woman in space. And for me, I remember in the 80s, like, just her being constantly on Sesame Street,
mm-hmm.
3-2-1 Contact, a lot of stuff. Like, And it was, like, only when she passed away I realized, wow, she was a kind of a hero. Like, I didn't, like, worship her or anything like that, but it registered in the back of my mind that anybody could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
And even, you know, and it's kind of sad that only after her passing to come out that she was in a
27-year relationship.
A 27 homosexual relationship.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just made me smile. That's not only was that, you know, like, that anybody can become an astronaut.
Yeah.
And let's get back to that place where anybody can be anything that they want.
Well, you know what? The statistic I heard is that she, at the time, was the youngest American to go to space ever. Right. And here's the sad part. She's still the youngest American to have ever gone into space.
There you go.
But I feel like that's actually the thing I find really fascinating about her legacy. Like, it's not necessarily her work as an astronaut. It's her outreach for the space program and for science and math in general.
Yeah.
That really got, that is what everyone is really connected with.
Right.
And yeah, it's because of all the stuff we're talking about. I am really surprised that she never did a cameo on Star Trek, though. Because apparently, like, doing cameos on Star Trek Next Generation...
And now tickets there.
No, it was just, like, you know, it's, like, the connection between Star Trek and the actual space program is one of the most delightful things you'll ever read about.
Right.
And so there are several astronauts have, like, you know, played, like, transportation officers or something. And it's just basically, like, a... They get to wear the uniform and, you know, operate the control panel and have, like, maybe one line. But it's one of those things where, like, you know, the next generation cast and crew would be like, wow, this person's a real person who's really done something amazing. And then they would be in awe, and then the astronaut would be like, holy crap, I'm on Star Trek. And it's just like this wonderful, like, synthesis and nerdity in one moment. So I was surprised that Sally Ride had never been an astronaut in Star Trek, but she didn't really need to be.
No. She was on Sesame Street, for God's sake.
She
was in High Arts. No kidding.
She's cultured. She's on PBS. All right. I think with that, it's time to say goodnight. But as always, you can find us on Twitter and Twitter at TimeyWimeyTV. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TimeyWimeyTV. If you search for us on Google+, then you will find a very complicated long URL I cannot recite to you, and you can comment on us there. You can also find us on the internets at timeywimey.tv, and maybe one day, someday, you will find us on iTunes.
Yes, I'll keep pinging them on that matter.
Yes.
But until next time.
Yes. Oh, you can email us at feedback@timeywimey.tv as well.
That's
true. We love your tips and tricks.
And until next time, keep watching those terrible time travel movies.
Because apparently we will also continue to watch those terrible time travel movies. And yeah, if you have any more suggestions for how we can continue to ruin our lives.
Keep them to yourself. No, okay.
Or send them to us and I'll make Rudy do it.
Oh, that's true.
All right. But have a great, until next time, have a great Timey-Wimey time.
Bye, all.